This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. I want to start with a quick programming note. Governor Mike DeWine will be addressing the state this evening at 5:30 p.m. It's a televised address on the current state of the coronavirus pandemic in Ohio. That address will also be on the radio. In fact, this radio station, 91.7 FM, at 5:30. We don't have details on exactly what the governor will be speaking about, but respective to his other press briefings related to the coronavirus, this is a bit unusual that it's not happening at 2 o'clock and instead at 5:30. Again, that will be live here on 91.7 at 5:30 when the governor addresses the state of Ohio about the coronavirus pandemic in this state. And now for today's show, Hamilton County has at least a 40,000-unit shortage of affordable housing. That's according to multiple studies at this point. Meanwhile, rent has increased in Cincinnati by 43.6% in the last decade. That's according to Zillow. And now, Local Initiative Support Corporation, or LISC, of Greater Cincinnati has unveiled a community-wide housing strategy created by a multi-agency coalition examining the housing crisis and providing a roadmap for city and county leaders to enact what they hope is change. So here to talk about housing our future, our LISC Executive Director, Kristen Baker. She's on the phone. Kristen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And another partner in this research, Cohere Bridge Builder, Kendra Davis. Kendra, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me as well.
If you have questions or comments about what you're seeing in your part of Hamilton County as it relates to affordability and housing, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can email your questions or your comments to talk at WVXU.org. We'll also look for your questions and your comments on Facebook and Twitter. I want to start with you, Kristen. When we talk about affordable housing, what does that mean?
Well, it's a great question, and I think it's a great place to start because affordable housing has a lot of misconceptions around it. Really, there's sort of two variables at play here. One is household income. So we know that in Hamilton County and Cincinnati, the number of low-income households has grown, and right now about a quarter of all households in our county have incomes below $25,000. The second part around affordable housing is how much of someone's income they are paying towards their housing. So we typically like to say that no more than 30% of a household's gross monthly income should go towards housing and housing-related expenses, which would, of course, include your rent or mortgage, insurance, property taxes, et cetera. In those lower-income households that I mentioned before, and even moderate-income households, we have too many that are paying more than 30% of their costs towards housing, and that comes at the expense of all the other things that we need to keep our families moving forward and healthy. We know that about a fifth of our households in this community are considered moderately rent burdened. They're paying up between 30 and 49% of their income towards rent. And in some cases, we have families that are severely rent burdened, paying more than 50% of their income towards rent, and those are typically households that are making below $25,000 a year. We also, one final point I really think is important in this conversation is the racial inequity that is involved in our housing affordability issues here. Our Black households are much more likely to be cost burdened than white households, and that is something that we need to collectively address as a community.
And Kendra Davis is with Cohere Bridge Builder is a bridge builder at Cohere, I should say. Kendra, tell us what is the impact of this situation? As we just heard Kristen lay out what the situation is, what's the impact overall in the community because of this situation?
The impact is great. The fact that as you look at the neighborhood, you look at the development, a lot of the everyday necessities may not be in the area where the rent is affordable. We're talking about food deficits. We're talking about a lack of adequate healthcare access, transportation. A lot of factors come into the development of where you live. At this point in time, the most important thing here is that we make it fair. And that was one of the reasons I could get behind taking place in this development of a housing strategy, because they get to shy away from the tough questions. Race is definitely a factor, and it's clearly seen in the data. So one of the one things that most people have to take into consideration is not just your gross income, but what is your net pay? That is what the budget is. A lot of people have a higher gross income than what their net income is. And when you run into that out of this package. It's already a budget with the rent, the transportation, and just food costs. It's a real big shift from even low income to moderate income because those expenses tend to increase.
Okay, we're going to check in with Kendra and try to get some of that audio situation addressed. And Kristen, let's turn it back over to you. This study, Housing Our Future, what was the goal here?
So the goal was really born out of some of the research that you referenced in the introduction, Michael. You know, we as a community, Cincinnati, Hamilton County, we tend to think of ourselves as a low cost of living, affordable place to live. But we knew that in the neighborhoods and communities where the at work is taking place, that families were really challenged. We saw an opportunity to bring together a really coalition of community leaders, experts in the field, practitioners, groups like Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing Authority, the Cincinnati Development Fund, the Port, providers like Over the Rhine Community Housing, Housing Opportunities Made Equal, Legal Aid, all really key partners in the housing ecosystem here in Hamilton County and Cincinnati to say, you know, we have a problem here. We have families that are not thriving in our community and that are really experiencing tremendous challenge. So what are we going to do about that? In many other places, I will say, typically this type and kind of strategy is led and driven by the local jurisdiction or government. We've been really fortunate that Hamilton County and many of the jurisdictions therein have been involved and supportive and see value and want to leverage their resources to help create this change because they're a critical component to making this work happen. But we felt like as a community, we had to do this together. So we had over 200 participants in this strategy process that really created a set of 10-year goals and objectives to help produce and preserve that housing affordability, to protect our vulnerable residents from housing insecurity, and to influence and change at the systems level some of the big things that intersect and interfere with housing affordability, things like our wages, transportation, other infrastructure needs, things like food deserts, like Kendra mentioned. So there's a lot of intersection with all of that work, and we really wanted to ground it in what we need in terms of housing and the housing market here in Cincinnati.
Okay, so Kristen, when we talk about addressing 40,000 units that aren't available at an affordable rate by the definition provided, and addressing that over just 10 years, does that include new housing, or is that bringing some of the housing opportunities that are already online into a more affordable target?
It's both, and it's an ambitious number. And it's a number that makes a lot of people a little nervous, quite frankly, myself included. We decided to tackle that by breaking it down to 2,000 units a year. And that's 2,000 units specifically affordable to folks that are at 60% of the median income or below for each year for the next 10 years. So that's really 20,000 units. So we're not closing that gap. The resource required to close that 40,000 gap is tremendous. And so we wanted to try to take on a measurable and achievable amount, still ambitious in number, through the strategy in this first 10 years. And just to connect back to sort of real dollars, because when you talk about area median income, sometimes people's eyes glaze over. That's about $35,000 a year. And that's really families that are working in a lot of these jobs that are directly impacted by the COVID crisis. So people in retail, people in hourly wage jobs, things like that. So these are folks that are, you know, helping to make our economy go, and we need to make sure they're housed properly. So it is a combination of bringing new units to the market and also addressing and preserving the units that are affordable in communities now that are also communities that are changing. And how can we make sure that neighborhoods and communities where people have always been able to live relatively affordably without having any sort of support or assistance from public resources such as a CMHA or other resources, that those units stay sort of in a place that people can afford to pay that rent. So there's a lot of different strategies. There's about 41 that we name out as key in the proposal, but we actually have over 100 total that help to address this all comprehensively.
And one of the charts included in this Housing Our Future study that was produced and released in the spring indicates that the top five jobs in the Cincinnati metropolitan area do not pay enough to afford the median housing cost here. So, for example, according to this research, it takes an annual salary of $55,000 to afford the median home with a mortgage and an income of $33,200 as the minimum income needed to afford the median cost of a two-bedroom rental unit. And so, for example, a registered nurse who pulls in an average of $50,600 per year could afford the two-bedroom rental, but still doesn't make enough to afford a mortgage. And you've also got listed retail salesperson, laborer or material mover, food service worker, and customer service representatives, all well below that $33,200 salary needed to be able to afford the minimum income, to be able to afford the median two-bedroom rental. Kendra Davis is a Cincinnati resident who served as a bridge builder for Cohere. Help us understand what a bridge builder did during this process, Kendra.
Okay. So ideally, I was invited into the process as a CMHA resident and also a person who has been navigating the affordable rent market now since I've been on my own, which will be about 13 years trying to maintain my own home. I've worked for the IRS, and as a bridge builder, I work with connecting Cohere to individuals that might be able to speak to the CEOs and the decision makers and let them know how the average everyday person deals with it, whether it was the Metro conversations, the Cincinnati Public School conversations, which we had recently, and especially where my heart was most driven was this affordable housing platform, because I just crossed over myself into the moderate income. I don't mind saying I make $36,000 a year, and I'm struggling to find an affordable two-bedroom on the east side of Cincinnati. So being able to be one of the opening speakers to kind of lead the charge for why this is important, that is how I took place with the housing strategy. I also met a couple of the meetings that they had once they broke out into smaller groups with the CMHA resident, and just getting a real understanding of how the laws work. Because most of the time you think, hey, you can just step out there and create these things as far as affordable housing. But there's a lot of legislation, and some of these rules need to be relooked at. I learned a lot from participating in the conversation just about how it all works. The biggest thing that came into mind from being a part of this is the fact that there are tax breaks that are given. And they're given for affordable housing, but the people that take place or take part, should I say, in the building of affordable housing don't sign back up. So then that's why they lose their Section 8 or being affordable, is they give up the tax break and go market rent. And somebody could be there for 10 years plus and then be told to move because they're no longer doing that program. And it shifts people around. You see it in Cincinnati. We've been shifted around, and a lot of people don't address the fact that the West Side is the only part of the city that seems to be affordable right now if you're looking for market rent. It's very hard to find a two-bedroom on the east side of Cincinnati, so a line has been drawn.
Kendra, I understand that you're also facing unexpected difficulties while searching for an apartment. As I understand it, you've been hit with some application fees only to find out you didn't get the unit.
Oh my God. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
The most frustrating thing, because I have spent $200 out of my own money. And this is just since March. I had a $65 one because she said she was running a background check. So I had to pay for the federal background check. And I asked her, because she was the second person I had given an application fee to, are you, you know, as long as this background check comes back correctly, are you willing to rent to me? And she said, yes, I'm just waiting on the check. So I called her back that Thursday. She didn't call me like she said. So I called her back the following Thursday just for her to tell me she already rented it. And I'm like, I literally gave this money to you last week, Tuesday, with the understanding that you just needed 3 days for this check to come back, but to give you a week. And you could just tell me you took my $65 and you've already rented it. That's $200 that I need. I have a daughter. It's been a struggle with COVID because she's not in school. She's not in the Boys and Girls Club program. So she's home. So we have to keep her active. We have to keep her attentive. And every bit helps as far as for making sure that we have our supplies in the home, or we can make a trip to go get ice cream. So I don't really have money to waste behind these application fees when landlords, I believe, in the beginning when I hand them the money order, know they have no intent to renting.
Okay, we're going to pick up this conversation. We want to hear more about the situation in which you find yourself, Kendra, and the experience of working with Cohere and LISC in developing this. We're joined by Kendra Davis and Kristen Baker from LISC. This conversation will continue coming up. And a little bit later on, we'll discuss the what-ifs surrounding whether working from home could become a permanent situation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A new plan called Housing Our Future aims to help tackle a housing crisis in Hamilton County and Cincinnati. Reportedly, we have an affordable unit shortage of about 40,000 here. We continue now with LISC Executive Director Kristen Baker. Kristen, thank you for sticking around with us.
Happy to.
And Cincinnati resident who served as a bridge builder for partner Cohere, Kendra Davis. Kendra, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to share your story about struggling to find affordable housing, you can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. Just before we went to break, we heard about Kendra's personal struggle right now as it's ongoing, both in finding an affordable unit for her and her daughter on the east side of Cincinnati and also being hit with application fees for units that she ultimately does not get a lease for. So, Kristen, how common is a story like Kendra's?
Unfortunately, this is a reoccurring theme that we've heard from so many parts of the community, and it's really disheartening, quite frankly, to know that that people are being taken advantage of. And part of the strategy document really talks about the need for more tenant protections and to have those be enforced, because people like Kendra, who are looking for a safe and secure place to live and to raise family, need to know that they're not being taken advantage of. And there are a lot of unscrupulous landlords, unfortunately, that make decisions like this that really impact someone's bottom line. So we are, and there are fair housing issues attached to this as well. So there are many reasons that we need to make sure that tenants have more protections in this market. And that's a really great example of just how that feels when it's you and it's your life and it's your household that's struggling.
Kristen, can you help us at all understand how the cost of rent is determined in various parts of town? We heard Kendra note that there's affordable units available on the west side. She's trying to live on the east side of town. So what goes into factoring that decision on how people are priced out?
You know, if the property or the, you know, apartment complex or whatever the location might be, if they are not subject to some of the requirements that go along with what Kendra was referring to earlier around certain tax subsidies or supports that they've received from local or federal government to ensure affordability, then it's a free market, right? People can price their rentals at prices that make sense for the neighborhood or the community where they live. I live in Pleasant Ridge, and we've seen rents just, you know, anecdotally from hearing from folks around me who are renters that, you know, rents have gone up precipitously here. And that is really difficult when somebody's trying to stay in the neighborhood. And if your lease is, you know, if you're a month-to-month lease or you're about to renegotiate your lease, landlords can absolutely choose to raise the rent to a price point that they think they can command in the market. So we have to figure out how to control for that a little better and make sure that if we can't change how many landlords behave or choose to behave. And, you know, this is a enterprise for them, right? So We're not saying that landlords don't have that right to do that, and they also need to be able to cover their costs and preserve the buildings or the properties that they own. So we understand that, but we also need to think about if we can't attack it from that angle at every turn, we have to think about wages and how do we make sure that employers are paying people wages that allow them to keep pace with the cost of housing in Cincinnati and being able to live here and continue to serve that organization or company with their time and energy.
We got an email from Janelle in Hamilton who asks, aren't there any laws or a path to a law that dictates how much a property owner can charge for rent, like only a certain amount per square foot and or available amenities or the like? And it sounds like, Kristen, you're saying no.
You know, other places do have rent control in place. You know, you think of bigger markets and higher priced communities like New York and the Bay Area and San Francisco have talked about those strategies. I think that requires a political appetite that I'm not sure we have here locally at this time. But that is the other piece of this work, too, is working with our local elected officials to help them understand what are the needs, what are the challenges that people are experiencing, and how do we really help make sure that we're keeping housing where it needs to be and at a price point that it needs to be, and what tools does local government have at their disposal to support those things. It's not always just about investing. We know the city in particular is really facing tremendous budget challenge. We're not always talking about put more money towards things. Ideally, they will, but it's also the policies, how things are enforced, how are we protecting tenants, what do landlords, what standards are they being held to? Because the other thing that I'm sure Kendra could also speak to in this is that sometimes apartments and rentals are in conditions that are not habitable. People should not be in those spaces. They're not cared for appropriately, but tenants are afraid to speak out against that because of retaliation, and they don't want to lose the housing that they do have, knowing how difficult it is to go out into the market to find more.
And Kendra Davis is a Cincinnati resident here on the phone with us as well, served as a bridge builder for Cohere while this study was being developed, this proposal on how to address the housing crisis in Cincinnati and Hamilton County. And Kendra, I would like you to talk a little bit about that, what Kristen just referenced.
I have a lot to say on that issue just because I do believe that we are in a great time to put the pressure on our political leaders. I had the pleasure of working with PG, our council member, who's now running for mayor, on the security deposit law as far as for giving us options for the security deposit. The only thing where it becomes a little frustrating is it's only for landlords that own more than 25 units. So a person like me that might be looking for either a single family or a two family home may not find a landlord that has to subjugate themselves to that law. But I do believe we are in a great time to make that change. Also, budgeting. And I do believe financial literacy comes into a play because tenants have to know how to budget and work on the income that they have. The only thing that I don't fully agree with that financial literacy is they're working with less than most people. So therefore, it's not just being financially responsible. It's also about making things fair for all.
And Kendra, Kendra, you're currently in a CMHA property. Is that right?
Correct. I am currently a CMHA resident.
And you are looking to move into a market rate unit.
That would be the goal, yes.
Okay, and so that's the goal of a lot of people, I would imagine, to be in an opportunity to move into a different type of situation. And you talked about how you've worked up. And do you think that you're having any difficulty because of where you currently live? Do you think there's some discrimination that goes on based on the current housing situation in which you find yourself?
Can we say that I totally think that because I have the income. I'm a government employee. My credit, I point that up. And the losing of those application fees, it makes me wonder, am I being judged by my rental history? I have good rental history with CMHA housing. No evictions, nothing from my record. So I myself thought maybe I should apply and get a background check myself just to know what's coming on this report. Because I don't get it. I gave $65. That incident was for an apartment in Oakley. I thought the nice area, very nice landlord, We had a conversation. She asked me where I previously lived. I told her, well, the last 5 years I've been a resident, CMHA, Walnut Hills. She did ask one question that made me kind of scratch my head. She asked me, how do I keep up the yard? And I told her I'm not responsible for the yard. You know, CMHA keeps it up, but, you know, I pick up trash in front of my house and behind my house. And she said, oh, okay, would you be into being responsible for your yard, too? And I said, okay, I've lived in a house before. I know how to handle the backyard being cut and cutting the front grass and keeping my property up. Then she asked me about visitors and how many visitors do I have in my home. And I said, well, I'm an aunt and a godmother, and I'm very proud of that. So I have a lot of my nieces and nephews. She says, but you only have one child. And I'm like, I only have one child of my own. Thought we did really good on that. When I called her back to find out that she had already rented it, and her response being, theirs came back before yours. And I was like, okay, but I thought we had that discussion. Were you willing to rent to me before I handed you this money? The $25 application fee that I had paid was for Norwood. And great apartment, I thought, only 6 units, because I really don't want to move into one of those larger communities because I'm kind of leaving one. And I want to have less neighbors. That's what I want. Great apartment. Only thing I would be losing is when we talk about amenities. Here, I have my own washer and dryer hookup. It saves me money because I don't have to pay to wash. Moving there, I would have been losing my washer and dryer hookup. I also would have went into in-unit AC. Right now, I have central air. So I do realize that while I might be stepping up to market rent, better location, some of the amenities that CMHA provides in my current home will not be available in market. And I just, it's a struggle. Do you give up your washing machine to have your own space in a different area? Do you give up the washer and dryer and central air? And it's just, what amenities do I really need? And the main thing that I know I'm trying to focus on is my daughter having access to her school. She's a student at North Avondale Montessori. Me having access to my job, whether it's by bus line. I do have a car, but being on the bus line to make sure I can get to work in case something unforeseen happens. And as we discussed, most people don't have that $400 in a savings account for unforeseen things. So I'm trying to limit myself to just those two, just to get out of here. And it's a struggle because I really can't afford $1,000 or more for a two-bedroom. I'm still trying to stay within the $800, $900 range. And to get everything that I currently have, I would be looking at about maybe $1,000 to have it all. And then, even then, I might have to go to the west side. And yeah, that's not the area of town I want to be in.
And to be clear, when you talk about having it all, you're just basically talking about making sure that you keep access to an in-unit washer and dryer and central air rather than a window AC.
Yes, as well
and proximity to your school, yeah.
Bus line, proximity to the school. My parents right now, I'm blessed with COVID. They are my child care providers. So both my family, mom and dad, and my brother are currently on the east side in Walnut Hills. So being closely connected to that as well. A lot of people don't talk about your social equity. And I have social equity on the east side. If I needed anything, my family members are literally a walk away. Not a call away, a walk away. So people have to think about that. When you are displacing people because of development, what are you also taking away from them? Because everybody will say, well, a washer and dryer, that's not a necessity in your home as long as the place provides it. But when you look at the cost, $20, which I don't know, I haven't washed in a laundromat for a long time, but I think it could be like $40 a week. Like $40 a week, that's $160 a month. It's a necessity.
Kendra Davis, I'm grateful that you were willing to share your story with us, this very personal story about the search for an affordable unit in which to live. Before we let you all go, I want to turn it quickly back over to Kristen Baker, the executive director of LISC. Your recommendations from this report, there's a lot of them. We're talking about expanding the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, maximize competitiveness for state and federal funding, amend zoning codes, modify tax incentives and funding priorities, access to public transportation and living wage situations. I mean, there are so many issues that you're trying to address here, but this strategy, as large as it is in scope, will also be large in price. And I've only got about a minute left. How does this get paid for?
You know, we are fortunate that the philanthropic community in particular has really taken a keen interest in this. Greater Cincinnati Foundation helped co-sponsor this planning process. LISC was sort of the quarterback for it, but really this is the community's work. And we're looking to really, you know, the conversation that Kendra just shared with us is just so important, right? Because what the questions the landlord was asking, those are questions that are veiled racial commentary about what she's asking about the kind of tenant that this person maybe wants to have in their building. Those are the issues we also have to address through this housing strategy. We have to change attitudes, and whether that's enforced through legislation or whether that's through community conversation, helping people understand that that their practices are discriminatory, quite frankly, those are the issues that we have to take on, too. That's not about money so much as that it's about community will and about creating change and support. So this is an expensive endeavor, to be sure, but we think it's worth it because if we do not address these housing challenges that our neighbors are facing, we're not going to be able to do the other things as a community that we want to see happen, and we have to support this fully.
Kristen Baker is the executive director of LISC, and Kendra Davis is a Cincinnati resident who helped assist as information was gathered for this exhaustive report on how to address the housing crisis in Cincinnati and Hamilton County. We've got a link at WVXU.org to read more. Kristen, thank you. And Kendra, thank you as well. And good luck with your search.
Thank you for having us.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.